Over the past 4 weeks, we've been looking at the theme in the Bible of God and the city. I hope it's been beneficial to you. I've enjoyed the study. But we've seen from the very beginning that God put Adam on this earth and mankind on this earth to develop a place, and he gave Adam the Garden of Eden. And Adam was to take the natural resources of God and use them and build them for the glory of God. But sin entered into the world, and things went really awry. And the city that Adam was supposed to build, we finally see at the end of the book of the at the end of the Bible, in the book of Revelations, was the city that God did build. But from the beginning to the end, there's this theme about cities that have been in the Bibles. And it might surprise you that archaeologists have confirmed, and historical documents have confirmed, that ancient cities were actually religious institutions, that the ziggurats, these mounds and hills that were uncovered by archaeologists, were original skyscrapers. And they were temples in particular where people thought the gods would come down from the heavens and visit. And cities were thought to be royal residences for gods, and cities were often dedicated to individual deities. And the city was where the cults for the gods were centered, and where religious institutions would develop. And all this is probably, and theologians have kind of been speculating, that all of this was because of the memory trace of the original design for the first city, which would have been the Garden of Eden. And so it was kind of a memory trace of where people were supposed to meet God. But after Eden was lost to us through sin, God creates a new city in the desert, dwelling with them in his tent, in a city of tents. And we kind of see this theme of cities going throughout the Bible. And it kind of begs the question, like, why are cities religious hotbeds? Why are cities religious hotbeds where people are spiritually seeking and spiritually restless? And part of it is the density and the diversity of cities. And the same dynamics that we see, the density and diversity of cities that produce cultural development, also keep people somewhat spiritually off balance and restless. And what do I mean by that? You know, because when you're out on the farm, when you're out in suburbia, surrounded by neighbors of like mind, you're not really going to be challenged about your faiths too much. You're never really going to have people deeply question your beliefs or anything like that. But when you get into cities where there's a large number of people, people are kind of spiritually off balance because you're going to be challenged quite a bit. And what's really interesting is when we see the dawn of the New Testament and evangelism starting, we see the Apostle Paul in particular going to all the cities and virtually ignoring the countrysides. You never see in the New Testament the Apostle Paul stopped at a pub on the side of the road in a city. He ignored it. When he entered into a new region, he planted churches in the cities, and then he left. Why is that? Why do we see evangelism in the New Testament kind of geared towards cities? The reason for ministries in the cities mirrors kind of what we've been seeing about the nature of cities. And I want to kind of look at this. And today we're going to come to the conclusion of this study by looking about Christ and the cities. Because if you're going to change a country, you have to change a region. If you're going to change a region, you have to change the states. If you're going to change the states, you got to change the cities. And some of the dynamics that are at work within the Bible that we see is, and think about it like this. Culturally, in the Old Testament times, why would the Apostle Paul ignore the countryside and go to the cities? Well, if you go to a little bitty village, hey, you might get one or two lawyers to be converted, right? But if you want to change the culture, you're going to have to go where the law schools are, where the law journals are published and things like that. You got to go to the city. And think about it kind of globally. In the village, you can only win a single people group here, a single people group there. But if you want to spread the gospel to 10 or 20 different groups, you got to go where 10 or 20 different groups are located, and that would be in the cities. And think about it on the personal level, because in the village, very little things change in the village. People live in very stable communities, and actually they're kind of suspicious of major changes too. Whereas people in cities and more urban people are a little bit more open to other ideas and other thoughts. And the same things that make them very good for evangelism also bring about a lot of evil, a lot of bad things too. But the result of that is and statisticians have, by the year 300 AD, 300 years after the death of Christ, over 90% of the cities had been evangelized to Christianity. Over 50% of the population of the cities had been evangelized to Christianity, whereas over 90% of the countryside still remained pagan. Pagan. And that word pagan is actually the Greek word for farmer, someone that lived outside of the city. Kind of interesting. So we've been looking at the cities and we've been looking at kind of the dynamics over the past several weeks and God's purpose for the cities and more specifically God's purpose for each of our individual lives and as a church too. Because even in Lilburn, we're living in a city comparative to the Old Testament time. But one thing before we look at Christ in the city, I'd like to look at is how does sin break a city? Because we talked about how from Adam on, sin entered into it and it kind of broke apart the city. And the diversity of the city under sin creates places of racism, classism, violence. And so the city becomes not a refuge, not from wilderness or persecution, but cities actually, when it's in that kind of dynamic, becomes a refuge from God and His law. Because remember, what we've seen over the past 3 to 4 weeks is two very different cities at play in human history and in your lives too. We have the city of God, which was supposed to be built by mankind, but we also have the city of man, which was quintessentially seen in the Old Testament in the Tower of Babel, where someone says, "Let us build this city in our image and for our name." And that we sometimes fall prey in our own individual lives saying, you know, I'm going to take my life and I'm going to build it for my needs. I'm going to build it for my name. I'm going to build it for my needs and my desires and my wants. And that always goes bad. But when you start changing, when you start that conversion process and you start living your life for the glory of God, things go much, much better. Well, when we look at the cities and we're looking at individual lives, the diversity of the cities, it creates a place for racism, classism, violence. People go to cities to engage in, and just think about San Francisco. I mean, that city is probably the modern day Sodom and Gomorrah, because you can go to San Francisco and you can live lifestyles that are perfectly acceptable in that city that's acceptable nowhere else in the United States of America. You can parade down Main Street in attire glorifying lifestyles that is completely unacceptable in anywhere in the United States. Second, while cities do attract and sustain enormous race and cultural diversity, human sin makes cities a place of constant racial strife, constant class warfare, constant crime, constant violence, just like in the Tower of Babel. In any human effort that's going to be based on human defiance of God is going to result in greater fragmentation and greater disunity. So today, cities built on the defiance of God and for making a name for the human builders will find enormous strife, enormous confusion, enormous violence between the different groups. So sin breaks the city. And it creates places of pride and arrogance and overwork and exhaustion. That quintessential city of rebellion is Babel. Let us build a name for ourselves. And so we see in cities, we see these areas of sin, areas of defiance on God. And so you kind of have four different ways that you can approach a city or approach individual lives. Because the restlessness under the sin that makes a city of hotbeds of cults and false beliefs is this. And this is the hopeful message in it. The restlessness there is because people have this kind of God-created hole that can only be filled by God Himself. And so how do we do this? How do we go about changing cities, changing workplaces, changing families, and changing individual lives? Because although we've been talking in the realm of the city, we can take that kind of analogy a little bit further. We're going to change nations. We've got to change regions. We're going to change regions. We've got to change states. We're going to change states. We've got to change cities. And let's keep on going. Brilliant video out here, by the way, The Power of Ten. Have y'all seen that one? Where they take the earth and they show, you know, they show the next bigger thing, which is the sun. And then they show the next bigger thing. And then they, you know, you get all the way up to this star in which you can fit 3 trillion Earths in this one star. you can fit this, you can fit like over a million different of our solar systems in this one star. And it's just talking about the power of 10 and how much bigger things are being when you get out further and further in the universe. Because sometimes you think you're so big, right? But they got one that goes the other way too. And as big as small as we are and as diminutive as we are as compared to that big old star called Cephas, you can go the other way and go down to the smallest particles of humanity. And as small as we are to that star, the smallest things that we know about on Earth are that small to us. I mean, it's kind of good. So we go from the nation to the city. Then we can go from the city on down a little bit more. If we're going to change the city, we've got to change the churches. We're going to change churches. We've got to change families. We're going to change families. We've got to change the individual. So everything we've been talking about in the big scheme also goes down to our individual lives too. And so how can we evangelize not just the cities, but our workplaces, our families, and ourselves? And that's going to be the heart of the message. Our text today is going to be found in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Begin reading with verse 8 through 10. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whether he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. One thing I want to pause and just kind of touch on real quick. In that verse 8, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance. There was an inheritance that was reserved for Abraham, and he was called to go get the inheritance. And see, he said, by faith he went after that inheritance. By faith, you go after the inheritance. By faith, you don't earn the inheritance. By faith, you didn't merit the inheritance. This is an inheritance that is set aside for you, and your faith as you is your ability to be able to go out and grasp what has already been given to you. You know, as Primitive Baptists, we're kind of unique in the theological spectrums of Christian beliefs, and that we do believe in total depravity, that every single one of us is a depraved sinner. That without God's ability, without God's empowering, without God's empowering spirit, we can't do anything good. We can't see anything good. We can't hear anything good. We don't understand God. We're enemies of God. But when God comes into our lives because of a sovereign choice that he made, because of his grace and his mercy alone, then we're able to go out and do it. And that's what we're called on. That's what we see Abraham doing. By faith, he went out to get the inheritance that had already been set aside for him. And what was he looking for? And he sojourned all around. And what he was looking for was a city whose foundations and maker was God. And so when we're talking about us going out there, because we all know, I hope as Primitive Baptists and as people familiar with the Primitive Baptist belief, we know that as children of God, and we kind of sense this tension, that we're not where we're supposed to be in our lives. That there is the image that God has for us in their lives. There is where we are right now. And there's this kind of tension because we need to be the people that has called us, that God has called us to be. That's why the Bible continually exhorts us to do this, to shun that, to avoid these people, to avoid these heresies, because it has a desire and a plan to get us to the person that God wants us to be. Jesus says, I've come, you might have life and you might have it more abundantly. Not that we just go to heaven, but Jesus wants us to have an abundant life right now. And that's only possible by the way and to the degree that we yield to Jesus Christ and follow his commandments and we're obedient to him. So how do we enter into this kind of transforming process of going from who God wants us to be from where we are now? Because this is going to be a transforming process. And we look at it and we see this kind of connection between Abraham, his faith, and this place that he called the city whose image and the maker is God. And so we look at the way through the Old Testament and the Bible that God has interacted with cities and God has interacted with individuals. And this is what we're going to see, because we're going to see some ways. And forgive my handwriting, I'm not the best in the world. But we have Jesus Christ, and how does Christ interact with the cities? And how have we in the year 2011 interacted with cities? And we kind of come down to like four major areas where we see Christ interacting with the city. We see a number of people that have believed that Christ is against the city. In other words, hang with me here, and every one of you know people that think like this, and we see it in Christian literature all the time. And we could get in trouble, and if we follow down this path, we are dead as a church and as a body of believers. And we're going to be dead in our spiritual life as well. Because when your paradigm is, it's Jesus Christ against the city, it's us versus them. Because listen to me, a number of us have in our homes, and I've seen in your homes because I've been visiting, we have that wonderful phrase in Joshua chapter 22. Choose you this day whom you will serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That is a great saying, but it can also be greatly misapplied. Choose this day whom you will serve, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Because there are those people that take that verse and say, aha, it's us versus them. I can choose the way of Christ, or there's the other way. I can choose the way of Bel. The two will never have anything to do with each other. It's us versus them. That is an incorrect application of that scripture. This is not Christ against the city. Because what happens when your paradigm is Christ against the city, what happens to churches and to individuals is called withdrawal. Where they withdraw. They shun the other people. And what does that lead to? It leads to a certain amount of religious pride, right? It leads to a certain amount of arrogance. Ah, we're so much better than them because we don't drink, we don't dance, we don't smoke, we don't vote Democrat. Ha! You know, it's kind of a withdrawal. You know it's true. We could be, y'all know I'm conservative. I'm not going to hide anything about it, but some of my Republican brothers are some of the self-righteous people I've ever met in my life. It's, we're so much better than everybody else because I check off my litmus test. And the result of it is nothing ever changes in the city. Now, another paradigm is Christ of the city, where, you know, the Christian institution, and I'm going to draw a little cross right here, and I'm going to draw a little Star of David right here, and I'm going to draw a little Buddha man right here. Where Christian institution is... I am a thinker, not an artist. Where the Christian institution is just one of many different institutions to bring liberty to humanity, and that by joining forces in some ecumenical movement, and can't we all just get along, then we can all benefit all of humanity together. So this is not Christ against the city. This is Christ of the city. And there's no real difference between the Christian faith and Judaism and Islam and Buddhism. After all, we all have a little piece of the truth. It's kind of like the blind people touching the elephant. Everybody... Oh, I'm touching the leaf. Oh, no, it's the ear. Oh, I'm touching the tree. No, it's the trunk. Oh, I'm touching a snake. No, it's a tail. And everybody has a little bit of the truth, but nobody can see the full picture. Well, the problem with that paradigm is the person telling the story can see the full picture. There is an absolute truth. And in our context, the absolute truth is Christianity. We are not one of many different choices and one of many different ways to God. Christianity is the only way to God. There is one Lord, one faith, one baptism. We're not one of many options. Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the light. So the problem with this one, whereas when it's Christ against the city, we have withdrawal. Right here, we have like what's called uncritical acceptance. And we can see that today by just reading the headlines. You can't judge. We're all just... Any organization that ordains homosexuality is falling in this category. That is unbiblical. I am not a homophobe. I am someone that can read black and white. That is wrong. And the problem with that is that there is no power. You are nothing more than a chameleon when you believe that Christ is just one of many options. Right here, Christ against the city leads to withdrawal. And what happens with churches is we go kind of into this fortress mentality. It's us versus them. We got to close the door. We got to ban the windows. We are just going to, it's just going to be us. It's the frozen chosen. And we're scared of the city. And we're scared to interact. And we're scared of the questions. And we don't like people questioning us about why do we use the King James Bible? Why don't you have musical instruments? We just leave us alone and let us practice. And nothing ever gets done in the city. But then you have the Christ out of the city, unconditional, uncritical acceptance of everybody. Oh, we're all, who am I to judge anybody? And the problem is the church becomes a chameleon and there's no real dramatic change in anybody's lives. But then there's also this idea of Christ above the city, where you have Christ exalted, which is always appropriate. And then you have the cities down here, Christ above the city. And what happens in situations like this, and this is a danger, it's a real danger. What happens in churches like this, and in lives like this, is the cities will, churches will send out kind of expeditionary forces, just here, here, and then we come back. I will give you a perfect example. Saturday, we're going to be taking food to the extended stays, and that's a great thing. And then December, we're going to be doing the shoebox collection, and that's a great thing. But if that is the extent of our ministry as a church and as people, we're dead as a church. And what happens is, and we can kind of see this because there is no, all you have to do is be a breathing, sentient life form to see that in the last 100 years, America's moral decline has just been increasing faster and faster and faster. And when you look at the statistics and the rate of people that are leaving the churches and accepting secular ideas and the demise of marriage and the acceptance of all kinds of lifestyles, what happens is that somewhere in the late 1800s, mid 1800s to late 1800s, the churches started to flee the cities and started going to the countrysides. And they stopped engaging the cities. And I'm sure they'd take bread to the hungry, and they'd send out expeditionary forces, and they'd have programs, lots of programs, so that the city could come in. But there's no real transforming effect going on here, because what happens is we have developing, when it's the Christ above the city thing, we have something called a Christian ghetto. Because we're not really engaging the city. It's kind of us, and we're willing to participate on just limited basis with the city and with people of opposing and diverse views on a limited basis. We got to get back, we got to huddle up, we got to get strengthened, we got to get re-energized, and we can go back and we can do a little bit, and then we come back and re-energize and huddle up and take a breath and get a breather and then go back and re-energize and things like that. And these three paradigms of Christ against the city, Christ out of the city, and Christ above the city will not change the city. It will not change your life. If you see sinners as somebody that Christ hates, somebody that you're bitter at, you pat yourself on the back, you're never going to change the first sinner. If you see sinners as, just somebody I need to love, and can't we all just get along? And I don't want to speak truth to them because that might be uncomfortable. You'll never change a sinner's life. If you see sinners as somebody that you just interact with sparingly, tolerantly, but you never discuss your faith. Never discuss your faith. Maybe once when somebody dies, they lose a kid. You'll talk about your faith at that given moment. Man, that's witnessing. You're never going to change sinner. Never. There is a fourth way. And it's the biblical way. And that is called Christ transforming the city. And that's what we see in the New Testament model. That's what we see in individual lives. Romans chapter 12. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. It is an individual mandate And we see that individual mandate being applied by the churches, where churches are transforming the city. And what do I mean by that? That means that you actually spiritually and socially engage the city and individuals at every level. Spiritual and social engagement. And what happens is when you actually start to spiritually and socially engage people and individuals at all levels, that's when cities are starting to be transformed. That's when individual lives are starting to transform. Because think about this, Christ against, Christ of, Christ above, in areas of your life too. Christ against, I don't know, let's just pick something. An area of your life that needs some work on. Christ against the adult bookstore that has opened up down the corner. They're hateful. You don't bother to engage people that go into places like that. You never change that. Christ of the city. Well, you know, that kind of lifestyle. Can't we all just get along? I don't want to judge them. I don't want to interact with them. Or Christ above it. We don't even engage people that talk about that. And when you don't do that, but then you have this lifestyle of Christ transforming, where you got to transform yourself too. And then if you find somebody that goes and visits a place like that, you actually interact with them on that level. Why do you do that? You know it's very hurtful for you. You know what Jesus says about something like that. This is an area of your life that you can improve on. Because you're never going to find happiness in that. And you don't even have to be, you could just look at statistics on stuff like that and know that you'll never be happy at it. There are MRI studies out there that show, and Brother Dolph did an excellent presentation on this one. MRI studies out there that show that at a certain level, if you keep engaging in that kind of lifestyle is not going to bring the same pleasure molecules in your brain. You got to go a little bit deeper and then deeper. It is a vicious, vicious hole. So you are called on to transform by engaging people or engaging yourself on that very same issue and not just ignoring it and sweeping it under the rug. Christ transforming, social, spiritual engagement. So what's the model of that? Whereas Christ against the city is a fortress mentality, and Christ of the city is kind of a chameleon mentality, and Christ above the city creates Christian ghettos where we just kind of send expeditionary forces out. What does this one look like? What does Christ transforming the city look like? And I want you to think about it like this. I was a very bad real estate agent 30 years ago after I got out of college. But one thing that we used to do in real estate, and they still do today, is model homes. Model homes where you actually would have people come in, tour your home, look around the home, and say, this is what a home needs to be like. And then your own personal level where you invite people in, come on, look at my life, look at my marriage. Look at what it's like around the dinner table. Look at what it's like on a team that I coach or a team that I play on. And how I interact with people when things go wrong. How I interact with people when how I handle where normal people would get mad. How I handle the little bitty nuances of our life. And when you're doing the model home, what's happening is you're actually spiritually and socially engaging the community at every single level. And then you give them, hey, where do you get your power to be able to do something like that? Questions will naturally arise. Just kind of give you an idea on this one. Because in the book of Revelations, it said, and there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had seven vials full of seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's life. Now remember when God called out Abraham, he says, Abraham, there is this, you know, I want you to go. I got an inheritance and I want you to go get it. And so Abraham went out looking for a city whose foundation and whose maker is God. He's looking for a better society. He's looking for a better place to go. And Abraham found his land, but he never found his city. And then you come to the book of Revelations. And many of you right now are looking for something. You're looking for something that's going to bring happiness in your marriage. You're looking for something that's going to bring happiness in your work. You're just looking for something because you're not happy right now. Things are not going the way they were supposed to go. And some of you, it's because you haven't been obedient. Some of you, because you got issues that you haven't really, you're still holding back from God. I'm not going to turn that one over to God. It's kind of like this regimented mentality. Oh, I'm good for God on Sunday afternoon and maybe Wednesday nights, but Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And it might not be, and it's not a willful kind of thing. Oh, I'm going to be disobedient to God on these other days. But it's kind of like you got this kind of segmented mindset of Sunday set aside for God, Wednesday set aside for God, but the rest of the week, I really don't need to think about Him. I don't need to pray. Rather than a week, I don't need to think about God, you know, Monday, Tuesday. I mean, I got bills to pay. I got debts coming out of my ears. I don't need to think about God. So you kind of segment God to just Sunday and maybe Wednesdays. And it's not a purposeful kind of thing. It just happens. But God is segmented out of your life. And if you're segmenting God out of your life, you are not in this category of Christ transforming the city or your individual lives. You're in one of these. And if you're coming to church on Sundays and that's a regular thing, then it's kind of Christ above the city because it's expeditionary force, expeditionary interacting with God and His children and His people. Well, here Abraham is, and he's out there, and he's searching for his inheritance and everything good that God has for him. And he says he's looking for a city whose maker and foundation is God. And then we come to the book of Revelations. The book of Revelations, where everything is as God wants it to be, and this is the key. The last angel with the last vial comes on up to him, and he says, I got something to show you. I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and a high mountain and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of the heaven from God. Did you catch this? The city that is talked about and is the culmination of all biblical history is the bride of Christ. The bride of Christ being the children of God. So when you know that out there right now in that world on Sunday afternoon at 11:40, there's children of God's out there who have not set foot in the church. Some of them are having hangovers right now. Some of them, their marriages are falling apart. Some of them are just recovering from addictions or in addictions right now. That God's children are out there too, and not just in this building or in other Christian institutions, but out there. That's when this is unacceptable, because God's children are out there. Christ of the city is unacceptable. Christ above the city is unacceptable, but Christ interacting and transforming at every level of the city, that's acceptable because the city is the bride of Christ and it's the children of God. That's why I think one of the many reasons why I believe the primitive Baptists interpret the scriptures correctly, because all these other models tend to think of redemption purchased by Christ individualistically. Did you catch that? Redemption that was purchased by Christ individualistically as simply for the purpose of the forgiveness of sin and getting to heaven, like Christ against the city. You know, Christ has purchased redemption for me personally, and it's because of what I've done, so it's just me and I don't have to worry about everybody else. Christ out of the city, well, Christ has gotten me to heaven, so I don't really have to get into those tough conversations with other people challenging my faith and my attitudes. I can just be left alone and be comfortable. Christ above the city, which is just kind of like this, except I'm going to do some good work so I can feel good about myself. No. The Primitive Baptist Church, as we see the light of the gospel that God has given us, says there are children of God who are in lifestyles right now that are so objectively abhorrent to us. And they may be children of God because of the grace of God, because it's not based on their ability to see, hear, accept, believe, be baptized, or anything. It's based solely on God's grace. That's what gives you the transforming power to be able to get out there. And the ultimate purpose of redemption is to restore God's created beauty. And the book of Revelation shows us this. And so this is how this passage ends. He says, and he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of the heaven of God, having the glory of God, and her light was likened to a stone most precious, even jasper-toned clear as crystals, with walls great and high and 12 gates. And at the 12 gates, 12 angels, and the names written thereon were the names of the tribes of Israel. And he goes on to describe this. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Abraham was seeking for a city whose foundation and maker was God. The city that God created is a city that you are a part of. And the foundations of this city as a church are the apostles and the New Testament. And the city is made up of a group of people that outnumber the sands of the sea and the stars of the sky. It's a number so vast no man can number it. They come from every nation, kindred, tribe, tongue, creed. That's all Bible. And it's not just primitive Baptists and Protestants and Roman Catholics. It includes Jews and Muslims. It includes the Hottentots. It includes the mentally challenged and the mentally retarded. It includes the criminally insane. It includes people that died, children that died in infancy. This is the city of God. And so we have no right, knowing full well that God's children exist outside the walls of this church, to ever look down on any of them, because we are all unequally worthy before a holy God. And when he gives us the light of the gospel, that gives us so much more the obligation and the duty to go out there and share Jesus Christ with them. Not in a self-righteous way, not Christ against the city, not in a kind of pat them on the bottom and say, I go out there and keep on keeping on because, you know, who am I to judge? That's Christ of the city. No, no, no. Not Christ above the city where we interact with them just once in a blue moon. No, no, no. We interact with these sinners and we interact with the poor and the downtrodden every single day, and the best way we do it is engaging them at every single level like a model home. And I just got to ask you, if you're wondering, well, how am I doing at that? What if Christ came at any given moment to sit at the dinner table on Thanksgiving? Is your model home one that permeates and radiates the glory of God? Where if there's an argument, it's dealt with biblically. If there's a disagreement, you handle it spiritually. There is no gossiping about everybody else or ripping them down or tearing them up. There is no secret sin and hidden lust in your model home. Because if you're going to change your community and your coworkers, and you're going to effectively evangelize Jesus Christ, you have to effectively evangelize your own life first. Do not be conformed to the world. Be ye transformed by the renewing your mind. And in closing, I want to just leave you this. Those two words, don't be conformed, but be transformed. The word conformity is actually, and the Greek word, is actually kind of a pressure that's coming on you from the outside. Don't be conformed like Plato, whenever you put those little images and you kind of imprint things on it. He says, you know, you got pressures of the world that are just pressing down on you. And we do. In 2011, we got more pressures on us than they ever thought to have 2,000 years ago. We really do. But they had a lot of pressure on them too. I mean, you can't go in the grocery store and look over to your left at the cover of a magazine without pressures coming on you, whether it's bizarre political beliefs or bizarre notions about morality. You're getting affected by every commercial you see, every movie you laugh at, every joke you tell, every book you read, every newspaper article you see. There's all kinds of pressures right now just trying to conform you. But the Bible says, don't be conformed. Resist that kind of pressure. Be transformed. That's something that happens from the inside. Have something that happens from the inside, and it all starts with a full and complete appreciation for how unworthy we are, how totally depraved we are, how without God's Spirit, God's grace, and God's mercy, we're just like everybody else. And then when we see that, we will see and we will be able to have that kind of transforming power. Because until we get that idea, we're going to be falling in one of the other traps of Christ against the city, Christ of the city, and Christ above the city. And Christ is not meant to be any of that. Christ is supposed to be transforming the city through you. You're his hands, you're his feet, you're his eyes, and you're his ears. How can that be? Well, in the book of Revelations, God, he says to the people on the right hand, he says, come and inherit the kingdom of God prepared for you from the foundations of the earth. There is an inheritance for the people of God. And then to the left, he says, depart from me, you workers of iniquity, I never knew you. Oh, what do you mean we never knew you? When I was hungry? Well, the people of God, you know, how did, you know, Lord, we're not willing. When did we ever interact with you? When you visited the poor, the downtrodden, when you fed the hungry, when you clothed the poor, when you do it to the least of my children, you've done it unto me. That's Christ in the city. And when we're interacting on a social level, when we're interacting on a spiritual level, when we're interacting with children of God, whatever lifestyle they're involved in right now, we're interacting with Jesus Christ. The transforming power of God should compel us through love and appreciation for what Christ has done, because we are so unworthy. We have done nothing good. Our righteousness is as a filthy rags. There's none righteous, no, not one. And because of that, Christ says, because of what I've done for you, I want you to go out there and I want you to tell all my other little children who don't have it as good as you do, who haven't done it as good as you do, don't look down your nose at them. Don't withdraw from them. Don't pat them on the bottom when things are going bad just because you're uncomfortable speaking truth to them. Get out there, wrestle with them, love them, and put up with all their faults and their failures.